You're listening to the King of the Fourth podcast, offering in-depth analysis on all things Boston Celtics with your hosts, Jim and Mike Quigley.
Hey, everybody. It's Friday, October 27th, and you're listening to the King of the Fourth Quarter podcast. I'm Jim Quigley with my brother Michael, and the Celtics are 1-0 after going
on pace. On pace for 82-0.
That's right. On pace for 82-0. And you know, I went over the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, a kind of, I thought, ugly game at times. But some good things, some bad things, and you know, probably some considerations that are wild overreactions. But Mike, we'll start with you. What did you like from this game on Wednesday night?
I love the third quarter. I love how the Celtics came out in the third quarter. I like the full court press and kind of like that diamond structure with a little bit of zone mixed in with the bigs and having White and Holiday pick up full court. I thought the ball pressure was really, really good for most of the third quarter. Even when the bench came in, I thought the ball pressure made a big difference in the game with the Celtics expanding their lead to about 13 points. I just thought it was really good, intense defense for a long period of time. So that gave me hope that this is what they're capable of.
Yeah, no, I there was a particular stretch in the third quarter that was encouraging to me, too. The Knicks, you know, went on a 10-0 run in like a blink of an eye and either tied the game up or it was a one-point game. I don't remember when the Celtics had control throughout the entire game. And Tatum and Porzingis both went to the bench, and you had a lineup of Brown, Pritchard, Hauser, White, and I think maybe it was Al Horford or Cornett. I don't remember. But the Celtics, you know, really dug in. It was Horford because he had a couple big threes. Really dug in, and they ended up taking a 9-point lead into the fourth quarter, and it was – all through defensive pressure, like you mentioned, and it was through grit, and it was just really getting into it in the half-court defense that led to some transition offense and some open threes down the other end. And I thought at that point that was a critical point in the game. As it turns out, the Knicks go on another run, and the Celtics kind of have to, you know, pull it out in the fourth. But, you know, that was kind of encouraging to me. And it was interesting. I thought that was the best basketball Brown played all game. And it was when, you know, it was without either Tatum or Porzingis. The other thing that I liked, Mike, and, you know, two things, and you can weigh in on both if you want, is Holiday's defense, particularly on Julius Randle. I think he held him for 1-for-10 when he was covering him. Obviously, Randle is much, much bigger than him. This is, you know, kind of something we used to see with Marcus Smart when he was here. But it was an element where they could, you know, put the point guard on an all-star power forward and really kind of shut him down. That's an element to this team that probably no one else in the league, maybe outside of Memphis, really has. And so that was excellent. That was really, really excellent. And without that defense, the Celtics don't win the game. The other element, and I think this is the most important one, was just the two-man game between Tatum and Porzingis and what right. Porzingis brings on both ends of the court. Obviously, you're not going to get 35 points from him every night, but he was excellent. He was excellent shooting the ball. He was excellent defending the rim. He was excellent in the two-man game. And, you know, when him and Tatum are both going, or even when they're not, you know, you can see how that will be the offense when they need a bucket, when it's down the end of the game. It's going to put the ball in Tatum's hand, and they're going to work a two-man game between him and Porzingis. And, they probably feel like there's not many teams in the league that have an answer for that, if any at all. And that, you know, I knew Porzingis was good, but the potential of that, you can see what Brad Stevens was thinking and why he was willing to give up so much to get him. So those are the things that I liked. I don't know if you wanted to follow up or add something else?
Yeah, I think Porzingis definitely added an element to the end of the quarter, fourth quarter offense that the Celtics have been looking for a long time, something consistent that they can go to and run. And we saw those sets at the end of the game. You know, Porzingis had two wide open threes. He hit one of them. And that was obviously the difference in the game. So that's, I think it's something really to look forward to. I mean, even the first quarter, they ran that too, and the Knicks didn't really have an answer, where Porzingis ended up with 15 points and Tatum was getting his looks too. So that's, I'm looking forward to those half-court sets, and it does look like it's going to be something really efficient and beneficial to this team. So that's, yeah, that's a really good thing to look forward to.
What didn't you like, Mike?
I didn't like the lack of attention to detail. I didn't like the same old Celtics, the way they came out in the fourth quarter. I thought it was horrible. And Tatum and Porzingis were in the game at the beginning of the fourth quarter, or at least Tatum was.
No, they both were.
Yeah, they're walking the ball up, you know, really slow, not moving the ball, ISO basketball. A run that, and the coach called the timeout, so it's not on the coach, but a run that went beyond the timeout. I think at one point it was the 13-2 Knicks run to start the quarter, and they were just lethargic. They didn't look into it. Something that we've seen from them way too often. And it's disappointing to see that in the first game of the season, and I think that's concerning. You know, the good thing is they came back after going down 7. But again, we've seen that from them in the past too, whether it was the Lakers last year. But they do this too often. They make a lot of dumb decisions at the end of games, whether it's the Knicks score and you're up, I think, 2 or 4 under your own basket. You're up 2 and you inbound the ball, which forces the coach to have to use 2 timeouts so you can advance it. And we're lucky we didn't have a turnover there. Tatum got the inbound pass at the end of the game just in time.
Yeah.
So we could get the ball to Pritchard and go up 4. And it's just really, it's really, yeah, big free throws by Pritchard, but it's really annoying to see a team, as you said it when we were texting back and forth, that's been in so many big game situations, to still be so immature. And so for me, yeah, that was the bad, that they continue to not keep their foot on the pedal and put teams away and put themselves in situations that they don't have to be in, whether it's game 5 last year at home against Atlanta, not showing up in game 5 against Philadelphia, in the first 3 games of the series against Miami. It's, this stuff's got to stop. Inconsistency has to stop.
It is particularly frustrating when, you know, your bench unit really carried you, you know, through what was a rough stretch. It not only like treaded water, but actually, you know, was a +9 and got you that lead back when the Knicks had come all the way back, to only see you give it up in the fourth. And you get away from what was working, which was, you know, the ball pressure you were talking about and getting out and running. You saw immediately, like, Tatum locking the ball up in that fourth quarter and, you know, the ball movement just kind of stopping and going to isolation and late in the shot clock shots after, you know, not really running through sets. That changed, but it took them getting down 6 for it to change. And I thought the execution down the stretch was really, really good, but they were also aided by a New York Knicks team that missed a shitload of free throws. And so I don't want to say they didn't earn the win. They did down the stretch, but there was an element of luck that they got that win. And I do think there's, for a team that has played in so many big games, and here's a stat for everyone. Over the past 7 years, the Celtics have played in more playoff games than any team in NBA history without a championship. And part of the reason we're here is because of that execution, or letting the foot off the gas, you know, at key moments in really important games. And I, you know, you just want to see them learn from it and finally get past it. And I thought there was a little bit of that with what we saw down the last 6 minutes. You know, even when they got the lead or the game was tied, I thought they still ran an offense and you know, moved the ball pretty well and got either the ball to Porzingis with an opportunity to shoot or put him in a position where the Knicks were overreacting and had a foul. So I thought they were better with that, and they were better with defense in that last 6 minutes. But you're right, that stretch to open the fourth was pretty concerning. The other thing I didn't like, Mike, and I think there's probably some of this with you too, is Jaylen Brown. You know, defensively he was good. Like, so on that end, I give him credit where credit is due, and he led that group in that third quarter. But, you know, we saw some of the same really bad turnovers. You know, the Knicks got up six when he tried to throw the ball in between, like, four people cross court in the half court. The Knicks come down and hit a three. Then he inbounds the ball and throws it to no one. Knicks steal it, hit another three, and they're up six within a blink of an eye. And I feel like he's trying to figure out how he fits in this offense. And I think it's on Joe Mazzulla and the Celtics coaching staff to get him going early in games. And I understand in this first one, Porzingis and Tatum early in this game were just, they were on one. They were just hot. And when that happens, you'd be stupid as a coach to get in the way of that, right? But I do feel like, especially with Brown's such a good early starter, let's find ways to keep him involved and get him engaged, so we don't see him forcing the action as much. Like I thought he was forcing things. I like the thing with those turnovers, they weren't turnovers like you saw versus the Heat where he was dribbling into the crowd and he was being picked off. These were like turnovers of him trying to do too much, and it just, they were bad. So the Brown, to me, that was concerning.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of pressure on him now. It's the highest paid player in the NBA, and I'm really interested to see how this is going to play out, because there's a chance with the way that Tatum and Porzingis are so efficient, if that continues, where Brown may have to sacrifice part of his game for the betterment of the team. This is a guy who's talked about sacrificing in the past and being mistreated in the past. It's really, for me, that's a really interesting storyline with this season as it goes along. What if Porzingis isn't the better player, but what if he's the better fit for the offense and Brown has to take a little bit of a backseat to that and sacrifice some of his scoring and sacrifice some of his attempts for the team? How is he going to respond? And your point about the first quarter is really important. Brown has always been a traditional first quarter scorer. How many times have we seen him score like 15 points in the first quarter and end up with like 24 for the game? I mean, it's just the way he's always been the guy to get him going. And Tatum would take over in the middle of the game because it would take Tatum a little while to get going. Well, with Porzingis here now, Porzingis has been traditionally a first quarter scorer too, especially with Washington last year. If you remember games against the Celtics, he'd have like 20 by halftime, Porzingis, and he'd end up with like 28 for the game. That's traditionally what he's done. And I think there's something to this storyline because Tatum had a good first quarter against New York because of the offense he could run with Porzingis, who was easier to get him going. It's really interesting to see where guys like Holiday and Brown are going to fit into this offense, because one, Holiday is going to make huge sacrifices. He cannot play as a scorer anymore. There's no reason for him. He's not efficient enough compared to the other guys on the team. Is he willing to do that? And then second, Mazzulla has to figure out, like, where does Brown fit in and how do we make him fit in a way that he's going to buy in? Because they need, you know, an all NBA talent like Brown to win the NBA finals, to be locked into this team. And I'm concerned over time that there might be more nights like this in the beginning of the season, especially against teams like New York and Miami, and to kind of see where Brown's focus is, if he's not the main guy.
Well, I think one easy, maybe nothing's easy, and maybe it's not against Miami, but one easy solution could be early on in this game is running some of that action with Brown and Porzingis. And, you know, I think Brown's fully capable of doing that. And I think he's going to get a lot of downhill opportunities because of that, because teams can't really play off Porzingis because of the way he shoots. So, and Brown's explosiveness getting to the hoop. And I think in terms of, you know, Porzingis being an early starter, I think kind of less worried about that here with the way they can run offense between him and Tatum. I think he's going to get more opportunities than he's ever gotten before, even more in Dallas. And I know Luke is a great passer, but it's just a different style of play. You know, Mike, I have an overreaction. I don't know if you want to give yours first, but my overreaction, why don't I go first? Because it kind of ties into what you were just talking about. I really feel like, and this is a major overreaction, but there's a chance, and you hit on it. I thought you hit on it perfectly, that Porzingis could be a better fit for this offense than Brown, and not a better player. But in terms of pecking order, in terms of scoring, and in terms of what they can do with Porzingis, it's a new layer that they really haven't had. And I don't, you know, obviously Garnett's the overall better player. But as an offensive talent, I think you almost got to go back to McHale for a guy this size that the Celtics have had, that is really just so gifted offensively and causes so much problems for opposing defenses, you know, being in the prime of their career. And you could see a scenario, and it's not this year, but potentially offseason. The Celtics, you know, kind of look at this, and you look at the salaries between Brown and Porzingis. Brown's making 60. Porzingis is making 30. You see him as a better fit for the offense with Tatum. That you almost, and this has a lot to do with how Porzingis, can he stay healthy, obviously. There's still a lot of question marks on him and what needs to be answered. And, you know, Brown has had a great deal of success here. But you could see what the Celtics brass may be thinking as we look forward into the future of an exit plan for Jaylen Brown. That, you know, it's not sustainable having him at a max salary and Tatum at a max salary on this team and you know, paying that high into the tax. And maybe, just maybe, the better fit might be with a guy like Porzingis if he can stay on the floor. There's a lot of questions to be answered, but you can, with the way Porzingis impacted this, if, you know, he can stay close to this level, you can see him passing Brown in the pecking order on offense. Maybe not an overall play, but on offense with the Celtics. And you could see what that might lead to, you know, again, not something for this season, but down the line.
Yeah, I mean, Brown certainly has to play better than he played to end the season last year and the playoffs this year. And in order for Porzingis to really establish himself here, he has to be available when the playoffs start.
Of course. Absolutely. So
those are two big storylines because the Celtics don't have a lot of depth.
It's an overreaction, remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And my overreaction is the Celtics' overall depth. And if somebody goes down in the starting lineup and they cannot come back, the Celtics are in very big trouble, in my opinion. That's my overreaction. I don't trust any of the bench players. The reason I don't trust Al Horford is because he'll just break down if he plays too much. The way it's set up now, I think, is a good setup. Him not starting, him coming off the bench, him taking nights off. But if Porzingis gets hurt and Al Horford's forced to play big minutes, Celtics are in trouble. And the one thing that gives me hope is that they do have a lot of draft capital still. They have a first-round pick this year still. They have a boatload of second round picks that I hope that the trade deadline they do add, because I just don't trust any of these bench players to be consistent. Outside of Al Horford and maybe Peyton Pritchard will find a role. I think he can be a consistent player. Yeah. But none of them can step into a role in the starting lineup where I'd feel good about it. And the reason I say that even about Al is because of the way he broke down in the playoffs last year. He was really bad against Miami. And so that's my overreaction, is that their depth. I feel like this team's always pretty extreme year after year. Either they have zero depth or they have way too much. But I feel like there's a missing piece on this bench that they need. I know they're not going to get a Malcolm Brogdon in here, but it's something to consider. I think it's easy to find another body to have another big. I think the challenge is some sort of a guard or a wing who can fill it up pretty quickly and get you points off the bench. But we'll, you know, we can't ask for everything. But that's my overreaction, is that the depth of this team could cause problems down the line. That could be the difference for them.
Yeah, and I think that's why they loaded up with Brissett, Matulak, and Stevens, and I think they'll all see opportunities at that wing to see if they can give quality minutes as the season goes on. But to your larger point, if you look at last year's team, you had coming off the bench at some point or another, Rob Williams, Grant Williams, and Malcolm Brogdon, and they're all either starter level players or borderline starter level players in the league. The only guy I think you can say that is a starter level, borderline starter is Al on the Celtics bench now. And the rest are really bench and rotation players, but that's typically how teams that are top heavy and really have a chance to win it are built. You know, I don't think the Bucks are any different in that regard. I don't think the Suns or the Lakers or the Warriors. If you look around the league, that's pretty much how it looks. The Celtics were an interesting exception to that last year, and they failed. So
yeah. It's a good point, because I think the teams that ultimately end up surviving and winning are the teams that develop some of those bench plays. Denver has always been really good at that. Yeah. Miami has always been really good at that. And I don't think the Celtics always have. I think the Celtics have struggled in that area of developing some of those bench players into quality NBA players. And you know, that's an area that they certainly could improve in, which would help their depth down the line.
And it's luck, too. If you look at teams that win it, it's usually they are lucky with health. They're really, really good. But they've also had a season of fortunate health. And
hey, can I ask you a non-Celtics question to end the pod?
Yeah. And then obviously, I'll do a quick preview of tonight, Mike, what you think you're going to see. Yeah.
So obviously you've seen the rookie extensions across the league.
Yeah, most of them. I'm sure I've missed a few.
Yeah, I think those are really smart decisions by ownership, because those are tradable contracts for good players. So Indiana with Nesmith is a good example. It's not a lot of money in today's NBA. I'm stunned that the Knicks didn't extend Emmanuel Quickley. I don't understand at all the decision-making that goes. I mean, that even if you don't see him in your long-term plans, that's a guy that would be tradable for a team that's like desperate for superstars all the time. They're so horny for like the next name that's out there. You would want that contract on your bench. And the guy, you saw it again against the Celtics. He just light a match and he doesn't miss any shots. I don't understand why he wouldn't have been a priority in New York. That was just really surprising.
Yeah, you don't know what he's asking. I didn't follow those contract negotiations. Maybe you know better than me. Sometimes guys like that in a restricted free agent situation, they say, I'm going to bet on myself. You know, you're offering, you know, what I played up to my contract per now. So you say I'm a 15 to 20 million player, but I actually see myself as more as that as the years go on. And if you're a team that has, you know, eyes set on maybe be able to sign big ticket items in free agency, and there's probably a point, and I think the Knicks are setting up to do that. There's probably a point you can't go beyond. And, you know, if he's a restricted free agent, you can roll the dice a little bit too. I know Grant got signed this offseason with Dallas, but a lot of times these guys don't find a market because the money's all gone by the time teams want to take a risk on signing them. So I don't know. You know, the Knicks could have very well lowballed him. If this was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I would have been convinced that Knicks screwed up, but they actually have a front office that's more than competent, that's pretty darn good, if I'm being honest, and I want to be fair now, that they brought in there. So
that's true. They made a lot of good.
I didn't follow it enough, but I'm imagining it has something to do with them wanting to keep the flexibility to go after free agents. And I imagine that quickly sees, you know, 15, 20 million a year. That's nice, but I think I'm worth more than that, and I'll wait. Mike, thoughts on tonight? You know, it's a, you know, rematch, revenge, whatever you want to see. You know, I think this is the rivalry in the Eastern Conference right now. They've met two of the last three seasons, three of the last four seasons in the Eastern Conference Finals. They've all been long series.
Yeah. Defend the 3-point line.
Yeah.
For God's sakes, against the Miami Heat, enough's enough. Do not let Caleb Martin get off wide open threes. Do not let Duncan Robinson get off wide open threes. Whoever the new players are in Miami that we'll be introduced to tonight will probably become, you know, decent role players, because that's what they do down there. They just develop guys that we never heard of before. Don't let them get off. You have to dig in defensively. You have to get out on shooters. You have to run these guys off shots, make them make plays off the dribble. I think it's simple, but for some reason, the Celtics have a really hard time focusing on the defensive end against Miami traditionally. And that's what costs them year after year when they lose to these guys. You dig in defensively against Miami. You don't try to beat them off the dribble, and you try to beat them by moving the ball and getting out on the fast break. You're going to win, because Miami, outside of two guys, don't have the talent to compete with you if you play the right way. But when you get into the bullshit and you start playing stupid Celtic basketball, that's when you're going to find yourself in the fourth quarter watching Miami go on a 10-0 run while you're dribbling the ball off your foot, not getting out on shooters. So don't frustrate me with bad play tonight. Focus and you'll win. If you don't focus, then Miami will beat you like they always do.
Yeah, I'm really interested in seeing matchups tonight. Jimmy Butler has had a great deal of success against both Derek White and Jrue Holiday. He's kind of owned them both, where he's just such a smart player. He can get them to positions where they can't defend his shot. So I'm wondering if we see more of a Jaylen Brown matchup. How they match up on the guards and how they react to scrambling. You know, in a way, the Celtics are kind of better fit now to get out on these 3-point shooters, because you're not asking your bigs to get out on guards to cover them. So can they scramble and get to those shooters? Do we see some zone versus Miami tonight? I think that might be introduced.
We start against New York.
Yeah. What's that?
I think you will, because we saw it against New York.
Yeah, so I think we'll see some zone. And then on the other end, how does Miami match up with these new-look Celtics? In particular, how are they going to cover Porzingis? He's had some real success against Miami and Bam, another guy that he can just shoot right over the top of. You know, how does Miami – you can't really go into the drop coverage like they did against the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals with Al and – Rob, right? So how do they defend that? That's going to be interesting to me. Do they play a lot more zone?
I think they do.
Celtics answer that now, because I feel like you go zone and you put Porzingis at the foul line. How do you defend that? And so that's interesting to me, like the counters that we're going to see tonight.
I think the other thing that'll be interesting too is the Knicks went away from their starting center because he couldn't get out on the shooters against Boston.
Oh, yeah, he killed what's his name there?
So they weren't really able to play physical against Porzingis. And so I'm interested to see Porzingis' reaction to the physicality that he'll get against Miami tonight, because Miami certainly is one of those teams, even early on in the season when they play the Celtics, they want to set the tone. And so I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of, you know, physical basketball. Nothing dirty, but I think it'll just be a different tone that they'll bring than what the Knicks will bring.
And that'll be good. That'll be good for Porzingis to be thrown into this rivalry.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Mazzulla kind of, and I thought he was right. You know, he mentioned the Celtics' emphasis on physicality on the offensive end. And I thought you did see that, you know, with a lot of their high screens and the way they went to the basket and just, it was noticeable.
Somebody's going to teach Porzingis how to set a screen, though. Or maybe he just had a bad night.
He
doesn't really look like he sets them. He looks like he runs there and then runs away.
And Al got called for a couple.
Yeah.
It's really hard to screen in the NBA right now. They are calling that at such a high rate.
Your name's Bam Adebayo.
Unless your name's Bam Adebayo. Yeah. And, you know, I watched the Knicks and Bucks last night in you know, Brooke Lopez got called for a couple, and Embiid did. It's a huge adjustment teams are going to have to make, and I'm sure we're going to see a bunch of that tonight. So when you talk about these guys getting in and out of screens, I just don't think they're sure yet exactly how it's being called and what they can and can't do. And so it's interesting.
Were there any? I didn't watch that game last night. Just the highlights. Were there any flops called for technicals in that game?
I don't remember seeing that.
In the Philadelphia game?
Yeah, I don't remember.
He didn't get called for any technicals.
So I was going back and forth between that and the Bills and the Bucks. So they may have, you know, I don't remember seeing any of it. I didn't see Joel Embiid flop at all when I was watching the game.
Okay. Well, he had.
I didn't see him flop at all.
That's where we'll see
if they struggle quite a bit. Oh. I didn't see him flop at all.
Well, that's when we'll see. Like, let's see how they really call it when Joel Embiid starts.
I tell you, Dame Lillard is a problem.
Yeah,
he's a 30. Problem on that team. He is, oh boy, and he opens up things for other players. He is a problem.
He could be an
Sixers had no answer.
He could be an MVP candidate this year.
Oh, he's that good. Yeah, he is. He is that good. He was a top five player last year that didn't get talked about because of where he was. He's dynamite, absolutely dynamite.
Last thing, Jim, did you see like the Nick Nurse factor? Like, did you see the Toronto celebration after their coach's first win? Like, that looks like a team that was like freed from prison. Like, you can watch the video of their celebration after their first game of the season, how much they love their new coach.
I will, just,
like, how obviously they hated, Nick Nurse. And I have a feeling, I have a feeling Toronto's going to be a fun team this year, and that Dennis Schroeder found himself a good home. I think Dennis Schroeder could have a good season.
You're always high on Toronto, and you always find a way to mention Dennis Schroeder. Those are two things that, like, you will during the season. You have certain tendencies that you kind of always
find. I think he's going to have a good year.
Yeah,
and if you have a fantasy basketball team, Tyus Jones and Dennis Schroeder are two guys you should pay attention to.
Very good. All right, everyone. We'll talk to you soon.